Okay, so we're recording. It looks like I'm the only one here again, which is fine. Hopefully, those of you listening later will get some value out of this too. And we're going to go ahead and start. We did days one and two yesterday. So I'm going to share the whole screen. And let's see. So yeah, we're here on day three. Python basics and groups. So yeah, today's learning about Python, which, like I said, yeah, all right, I've got it over here. You don't need to know any programming to start this. You will need to learn some programming as you go if you want to do things with quantum computing, right? Computing, programming should be pretty obvious. And this definitely these like 3 days of Python won't get you everything that you need, but this should give you a pretty good start. So we're going to go ahead and start where everybody starts with programming, which is Hello World. The reason we're doing Python is a good proportion of the quantum computing frameworks are written in Python, right? Qiskit, Circ. I actually don't know about PyQuil. But in any case, Python is sort of good. It was also just a good language to start with as a beginner. So, yeah, let's go ahead and get started. Hello World is just sort of the most simple program that you can do in most languages, which is just you print out the line Hello World. So yeah, we've got this print statement. This is talking about the difference between Python 2 and 3. Everything nowadays is Python 3, unless you've got really legacy stuff. So don't worry about that too much. Everything should be Python 3, with a version modifier after that. I believe they're all the way up to Python 3.9 now. So yeah, you can see this line got printed. Yeah, so a lot of other languages like C++ and Java will use curly braces, which is this character, those characters. Instead of that, Python uses indentation, so it is white space dependent. It's kind of my least favorite thing about Python, but it does make it so that you have to have good like code style. Yeah, so four spaces or tab. I prefer tab. But you can see here that there are four spaces. So in this piece of code, we start with x equals one, and then we say if x is equal to one, which will just always run, then we're going to print x is one. It's interesting to note that both the comment here and the print statement are indented four spaces. If we run this, we get x is 1. If we make this comment not indented, it'll still run. Yeah, we still get the same thing. But if we were to indent this another tab, well, I guess we still get the same. But that can cause problems later. So best to just keep it indented four spaces for anything inside of another statement. Okay, so here's an exercise for us. Use the print function to print the line hello, comma, world. All right now it's going to print goodbye, comma, world. We're just going to replace goodbye with hello and run. Cool. If that seems really easy and obvious to you, that's because it is. And that's why we're going to do a lot more variables and types now. So Python is completely object-oriented. Sort of the, I guess the two main types of programs that you can have are object-oriented and functional programming. Object-oriented means you've got sort of like, it's almost like a definition of an object in the code. So for instance, like an object in the real world would be a phone. And if you had a representation of a phone in the code, that would be an object. As opposed to functional programming, which has some other constraints. And basically, there's some nice things about functional programming, but I guess we don't really need to talk about that. Functional programming, everything is a function instead of an object. And so functions like you would have with a graph like f of x would be a function. And instead of saying like turn the phone on, in which would be object oriented, you would say something like do the function that turns a phone on would be functional. It's not a great way of describing it. If you want to dig more into that, you can, but we don't really need to. Python is object oriented. And so we're going to go over a couple basic types of variables. There are different types of numbers. Here we have integers, and here we have floats or floating point numbers. Integers are whole numbers. So 1, 2, 3, negative 1, 0, those are all integers. And then floating point numbers can have a decimal. So that would be 3.14 or 1.66, something like that. So if we run this, we see, so we print out 7, we run this, see that it prints out 7 in both types. So the first one, right, my float is equal to 7.0, and we print out my float, it will print out 7.0. Here we say my float is equal to float of 7, and what that does is that 7 here is an integer, and we're turning it into a float by calling this float cast on it. So we get the same output in both runs. So strings can be defined with single quotes or double quotes. Some other languages will have, like a double quote would be for a string and a single quote would be for a character. Sometimes I still like to do that even in Python because you can define it either way. If I want to have a visual representation that I'm just gonna be dealing with a single character, I'll use a single quote. If it's going to be a whole string, I'll use double quotes. If we run this, we see that no matter how you define that string with the single or the double quotes, you'll get the same thing. That is the other thing. If you've got apostrophes in a string, like in the sentence with the contraction don't, then because we have the double quotes on the outside, the middle one won't break it up. As opposed to if we replace this one with the double quotes, you can see that now this is not part of the string. We're going to get an error if we try to run this. Yeah, invalid syntax, because we've got all this out here that isn't valid Python code. So how do you get around that if you've got a single quote in there? I believe it's you do 3 quotation marks, which makes it a I don't remember what that's called. It might be a string literal, but yeah, so we've got 3 quotation marks and we can see that we get the output, don't worry about apostrophes, with the double quotation marks in there. So you can do simple operators on numbers and strings. So that's add, you can even multiply. So if we run this, 1 is equal to 1, 2 is equal to 2, 3 is equal to 1 plus 2. And then here we've got hello and world. You can do hello plus space plus world. And we get hello world. What I was saying about the multiplication, let's say we want a new variable is equal to our hello variable, it's 4. So if we print out our new variable, we can see that we get hello, the string hello, 4 times. That's pretty cool. Assignments can be done on more than one variable simultaneously. Yeah, so if you define a comma b is equal to 3 comma 4, and we print this, we'll get A is 3 and B is 4. That's not a, it's not super clear here. If we do print A is A, and then on the next line, do the same thing but with B. We can see that we've split them up. A is 3 and B is 4, like that. Okay, mixing operators between numbers and strings is not supported. Yeah, so we can't concatenate 1 plus 2 plus hello. We'll get an error here. If it decides to run. Okay, we'll come to that, back to that later. Let's look at the exercise. The target of this exercise is to create a string, an integer, and a floating point number. String should be named MyString, should contain the word hello. Floating point number should be named myFloat, should contain the number 10.0, and the integer should be named myInt and should contain the number 20. Okay, so myString, we're just going to make this hello. My float is 10.0, and my int is 20. We run this. We get great job. Yeah, I'm not sure why this is stuck, but that's fine. You'll get an error when you try to run this. Okay, on to the next thing, which is lists. They're very important for storing a collection of items. In Python, we'll look at lists and dictionaries. Dictionaries are coming up next, but we'll see a lot of that when you're getting results from quantum simulations and actual runs on hardware. Because you do a lot of shots, they typically will return it. You won't just have one result. You'll have a bunch of results. Okay, lists are very similar to arrays. So you can start with an empty list and then add them. Appending just means put on the end. So if we run this, we see, so the first three here, 1, 2, 3, are from printing out my list. How you access the things in a list is with this square brackets. And you have to make sure that you don't go out of bounds. If we try to do print my list of 3, right? You might think that that would print out 3, but lists are 0 indexed. They start at 0 and they count up from that. So the index 3 is actually the fourth item. If we run this, we don't have a fourth item, so we get a list index out of range error. We'll get a lot of that later. Here, this is a for loop that will iterate over all of the values in the list. So for each value in the list up here, print out the value. We get this same thing. I'm talking about trying to access an index which does not exist, gives you an error, which is an index error, list index out of range. Why? Oh, that's interesting. It's like it popped up here. Line 2. Found that. Okay. Well, we can do this exercise. You need to add numbers and strings to the correct lists using the append list method. You must add the numbers 1, 2, and 3 to the numbers list and words hello and world to the strings variable. You will also have to fill in the variable second name, the second name in the names list, using the brackets operator. Note that the index is zero indexed, like we said. So if you want to access the second item in the list, its index will be 1. Okay, so second name is names of 1. We need to append things to numbers. So numbers.append. 1, just copy paste that, open three. And then we'll want strings.append hello and strings.append world. Cool, got it right. On to the next thing, which is dictionaries. So dictionaries are sort of, the difference being that lists map from an index to a value, and dictionaries map from a key to a value. Keys and values, yep. Stored in the index, key. Database of phone numbers stored in the dictionary like this. We hit run. So we can see that this is stored like this. So Jill is to this number. They don't have Jenny. There we go. Phone book of Jenny equal to 8675309. Run this. Let's see. Jenny now has the number 8675309. Dictionary can be initialized. So here we have curly braces. Those are only used for initializing dictionaries in Python, if I remember correctly. They're definitely used for initializing dictionaries in Python. Pretty sure they aren't used anywhere else. Dictionaries can be iterated over. A list will keep the order of the values always the same, but a dictionary won't necessarily. So yeah, we can see it goes Jill, or in our, when we define it initially, it goes John and then Jack and then Jill, but when it prints out, it goes Jill, John, Jack. So name, number, and so yeah, you, this will iterate over the keys and first, and you put the comma. Yeah. And then the element, key to element. Removing a value. So you can remove a value with delete, DEL, and then whichever one you want. So we remove John, and then we're left with just Jill and Jack. Or you can pop it, and actually that will return the value. So here we can do number is equal to phonebook.pop print number. We run this. We can see that when we pop it, John is gone. We're left with just Jill and Jack. And then this number variable is equal to John's phone number. Okay, we're going to add Jake to the phone book with the phone number this and remove Jill from the phone book. So we're going to go phone book of Jake is equal to phone number and let's do phone book dot pop Jill. We run it. We get Jake is listed in the phone book and Jill is not listed in the phone book. Nicely done. Okay, so that's it for day three. Obviously, I went through that pretty quick because I already know what I'm doing there. So we're going to move on to day four, which is some more basic Python. Yeah, make sure that if you're going to do this, actually, is anyone in the room? Nope. If you're actually planning on doing this for yourself, like if you haven't done Python before, you should go slower. And if you have done Python before, just skip this, right? Because you don't really need to go over this stuff again. Okay, so arithmetic operators, addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division. You can see 1 plus 2 times 3 divided by 4. What's that going to be? I'm going to get 6 divided by 4.0 plus 1. Yeah, 2.5. And it, Python does follow the order of operations. So yeah, multiplication and then division and then addition. So we're going to try to predict what the answer by our predict. Another operator available is the modulo operator, which returns the integer remainder of the division. We can look at this example. 11 mod 3, what that does is it divides 11 by 3 and then gives the remainder. So instead of just doing 3.6777 or 666666, then you would just have the 3 goes into 11. Well, we can get up to 9, and then there's 2 left over. So we should get 2. And then two multiplication symbols together makes a power. So like 7 to the second power, 2 to the third power. You don't have to just do 2. You can do bigger numbers. We can do yeeg is equal to 7 to the 7th. Get that out. See what that is? Number. Yep. Okay. Operators with strings. We've already seen that we can concatenate strings together, get hello world. And then I showed you the multiplication of strings to get a lot together. Yep, hello 10 times. Using operators with lists, you can just add lists together. It looks like it adds this, it just goes to the first one and then the second one. So if you wanted, these are nicely sorted, but now this one, the resulting list is not, you have to sort it specifically. And you can make a new list by multiplying an old list multiple times. Cool. All right, let's do the exercise. Target of this exercise is to create two lists called XList and YList, which contain 10 instances of the variable X and Y, respectively. You're also required to create a list called BigList, which contains the variables X and Y 10 times each by concatenating the two lists you have created. Okay, so that's times 10. That's times 10. BigList is equal to XList plus YList. Let's see if that works. Oh, is it not going to run it this time? Nice. Got it. Okay. Next thing is conditions. So that's things like if and yeah. Boolean is true or false, 1 and 0, on or off. We have conditionals. The double equals sign is, so a single equals sign is the assignment operator, and the double equals sign is the equivalence operator. So equivalence checks to see if they're equivalent. We'll run this. And the single, like, so this would assign it. Let's say we do, instead of is x equal to 2, we set x equal to 3. Now we'll get false on here. Oh. So Python won't let you do that. Other languages will let you modify things when you should be checking to see if they're different. Things like Java and C++ will let you do that, but I guess Python won't. It's good to know. So we check to see if x is equal to 2. It is equal to 2. Check to see if x is equal to 3, and it is not equal to 3, but 2 is less than 3, so you get true. If we do not equal to 3, true for all of them. Interestingly enough, sometimes it's dangerous to do print like number of nines, 7 and 6. So this, in this case, it was true, but floating point comparisons, actually Python might be different. In some languages, floating point comparisons like that will sometimes fail, where they will, even if they should be the same number, they won't be because of how the numbers are stored. But you shouldn't have to worry about that too much. Okay. And or operations can build complex Boolean expressions. So what and does is it only returns true if both sides are true, and or will return true if either side is true. So here we've got this expression. We've got the name is John, the age is 23. So if name is John and the age is 23, we're printing out your name is John and you are also 23 years old. And then here, if name is John or name is Rick, so notice name is equal to Rick. That would be false because the name is John, not Rick. But because name is equal to John is true, we've got this or in between them, the whole thing will run. In is really nice to see if name in a list. So here we've got name is John, and if name is in John, comma Rick, then we can print out your name as either John or Rick. It's nice so you don't have to iterate over it yourself. If you were going to iterate over it yourself, you'd have to say for name in list, then if name is equal to the name I'm looking for, then you print it out or return true, however you want to do that. Okay, Python uses indentation to define code blocks. Yep, we've already done that. So statement is false, another statement is true. So if statement is true, we're going to do something, but statement is false, so we just skip over that. If another statement is true, which it is, elif is short for else if. If this one was true, we wouldn't do these other ones, right? Because this only runs in the else case. If this one is false, then we'll check the next one. And if this one is false, we'll check the next one. We run this. Actually, we won't get any output. But what you'll see is we just print one so we know where we are. Two. Print three. We see that we get two, right? Because this one was false. So we go check this one. This one is true. So we print this one out. And then because this is our else condition, this is like if all else fails, we'll print this one. So if we turn this to false, we'll get three instead. Run this. So x equals 2, we do this, x is not equal to 2. I've been doing this, like I've been programming for a long time. A lot of this just makes sense to me, how my brain works. Again, you might want to slow down a little bit if you're new to this. So statement is evaluated if true if one of the following is correct. The true Boolean variable is given, calculated using expression. An object which is not considered empty is passed. If we say just if x, we get x equals 2, even if x is equal to 3, right? Because now we're just saying basically if x exists, so an object which is not considered empty. If we set this to none instead, that would be considered empty, and we would say x is not equal to 2. The is operator. So the is operator does not match the values of the variables, but the instances themselves. Yeah, so here we say we've got two different variables with the same lists. So they're equal. The values inside them are equal to each other. We can compare these two. But because these are two different variables, when we do print x is y, we're going to get false because x is not y. The not before Boolean expression inverts it. So yeah, print not false prints true. And print not false is equal to false prints out false, because this would evaluate to true first. Then we check to see if true is equal to false. True is not equal to false, so we print out false. Change the variables in the first section so that each if statement resolves as true. Okay, so there's no else's here, so we just need to look at each one. So if number is greater than 15, we're going to print 1. Make that 16. If first array exists, we just... Okay, except we need length of first array. Well, we'll just make this 1 for now. Yeah. Don't need to save. It happens. So now that should print out 2. So if the length of our second array is equal to 2. So I need to make that length of 2. Okay, stop saving, Ethan. We'll print out 3. So we need our first array to be length of 5. If first array exists and first array of 0 is equal to 1, that's true. And if not, second number. So that means second number should be false. So we're going to make this none. Happens. Oh yeah. Okay. That's it for conditionals. Next thing is loops. Loops make it so you don't have to keep repeating the same code over and over. You can, that does what it says. It loops so that it keeps running the same bit of code over and over, but you can change things in that. So yeah, we've already seen the for loop over that iterates over a given sequence. So for each prime in our primes variable, we're going to print out the prime. Hit run, we get 2, 3, 5, 7. Those are indeed primes. For loops can iterate over a sequence of numbers using the range and x range functions. Oh, what's x range? Range returns a new list with numbers of that specified range, whereas x range returns an iterator, which is more efficient. Very interesting. Oh, okay. X range is a Python 2 thing. It sounds like Python 3 uses the range function, which acts like X range. So yeah, X in range 5 will print out from 0 to 4. So it's inclusive, or it starts at 0. Or I guess, yeah, it's inclusive on the lower end starting at 0 and exclusive on the upper end, which means that we don't go all the way to 5. We stop at 4. And 3 to 6 will give us just 3, 4, 5. Yeah, 3, 4, 5. And we can also specify how many steps to take, or how big the steps are. So 3, 8, 2 will loop us from 3 to 8, taking 2 steps at a time. So we get 3, 5, 7, just odd numbers. You can also make it do negative, right? For x in range. I guess we'll start at 8, go down to 1, negative 1, print x. You see, as we start at 8, we go 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2. Again, exclusive at the start and then exclusive at the end, as opposed to, I think I said earlier that it was the lower bound was inclusive and the upper bound was exclusive. It's really wherever you start. And because we're iterating by negative 1 each time, we start at the upper end and go to the lower end. So yeah, while loops go until this is false. So while it's true, basically while this evaluates to true, do this stuff. So we hit run, count starts at 0, while the count is less than 5, right? So the first loop, count is 0. That is, in fact, less than 5. So we print out 0, and then we add 1 to our count, which gets us to 1. We go back to the top. One is still less than five. So we print out one, count becomes two, continue until count becomes five, and then we don't run on that loop. This is, I probably over-explained that, but it's useful sometimes to think through loops when you're debugging code. Okay, break and continue statements. A break sort of will end a loop prematurely, and a continue will stop doing what would normally be done on that loop and go to the next iteration. So if we hit run, we see here that this would normally run forever. While true is an infinite loop, you don't want those generally. But here we have if count is greater than or equal to 5, we're going to break, which means stop running this loop completely. Here we print out only the odd numbers, even though we have just a range that does not have a step, right? We're not saying start at 1 and only start at 1 and go by 2s. So you get 1, 3, 5. We're going over all of them. So we start at 0 and we go all the way up to 9. And what we do is we check to see if x is even. We can do that with the modulo function that we learned about earlier, right? Because if something divides by 2 with no leftovers, it means that it's even. And if it is even, then we hit continue, which means don't do what's left in this loop, which in this case is print out the value, and just go to the next one, right? So let's walk through these a little bit. So you start with 0. 0 mod 2 is in fact 0. So we don't print this, and we go to 1. 1 mod 2 is 1, which is not equal to 0. So we don't continue, and we just print. We can use else for loops. Interesting. When the loop condition of for or while statement fails, then the code part in else is executed. If a break statement is executed, then else part is skipped. Huh. Okay, interesting. So once this while loop is done, then we will print this out. Okay. That's a good way to check to see if something was terminated with a break as opposed to just terminated by being done with the loop. Cool. Okay. Loop through and print out all even numbers from the numbers list in the same order they are received. Don't print any numbers that come after 237 in the sequence. Cool. So for number in numbers, we're going to iterate over all of them. If number, we want even numbers, right? So mod 2 is equal to 0, print number, and actually before that, we're going to say if number is greater than so they're not in order. Where is, okay, actually, yeah, so what we want to do is if number is equal to 237 after. So we want to print it. We don't want to print anything else. Number is equal to 237, but we're going to break. Got it. All right. Cool. So that only took us 40 minutes. Let's go ahead and finish up learning about Python with functions, classes, and packages. We're getting into more advanced stuff, not so much functions, but classes and packages, which it'll be helpful later when we want to like import install packages, but yeah, we'll sort of go through this pretty quick. Okay. So functions are a nice way of not valid Python. Functions are a nice way of making it so that you can call the same thing in multiple places. Not necessarily in loops, but you have code that does something you want to call multiple times. For instance, you want to append and then multiply. You want to append a character to the end of a string and then multiply that string by a certain number of times. You can do that with that function. So yeah, here's what they look like. You start with def, short for define, and then you give the name. In here, you'd have any arguments that would go into it. Yeah, here we go. Well, yeah, I guess we'll get to that. So my function here, if we hit run, doesn't do anything because we haven't called it. But if we go down here, say my function, then we get it. Functions may receive arguments. So here again, we're not calling it anywhere, but if we do my function with args, and we say my username, again, and the greeting, a very quantum new year. We get this, hello QCN, from my function, I wish you a very quantum new year. So what that does is we pass it in here, username, you can see, comes down here, greeting, comes down here, and then this this S, or %s, is a string formatting thing in Python. And then, yeah, you give what you want to replace those with out here. Functions may return a value to the caller using the keyword return. So here we sum two numbers for whatever reason. If you want to make adding two numbers more complicated, then we can say num equals sum two numbers 2 and 3. We can print out that number. We should get 5. And it, now this is talking about calling functions. So we run this, hello from my function, John Doe, great year, and this doesn't print X, but we can print X, and we get 3. All right, let's do the exercise. Use an existing function, adding your own to create a fully functional program, add a function named list benefits that returns the following list of strings, more organized code, more readable code, easier code reuse. Okay. Okay, so we're gonna return. We can just copy paste that. Okay, don't need to save. Okay, modify this function to concatenate. Build sentence of benefit, not info, which receives a single argument containing a string. It returns a sentence starting with the given string and ending with the string is a benefit of functions. Okay, so return benefit plus is a benefit of functions. We run that. We get that. More organized code is a benefit of functions. More readable code is a benefit of functions. Easier code reuse is a benefit of functions. Allowing programmers to share and connect code together is a benefit of functions. All right. On to the next bit. Classes and objects. We talked about how Python is an object-oriented programming language. Here we're going to talk about what that means a little bit more. Okay, objects get their variables and functions from classes. Classes are essentially a template to create your objects. The analogy that I've heard is that sort of like a class is like the recipe to make a pie or a cake, and then the objects are the actual, once you've made the pie or cake, you've got a fully formed object. Okay, we've got a very basic class that just has a variable that has blah inside of it, and it's got a function inside of the class that prints a message. If we run this, we're not going to get anything because we don't create an object based on this class and we don't call anything. We'll explain why you have to include that self as a parameter a bit later. First, to assign the above class template to an object, you would do the following. Yep, so we're making a new object and we're saying that it is of type my class. We run this again, we don't get anything because we're not printing anything, even though we're making this. We're not calling anything that prints anything, but we do in fact make a new object. So we can access object variables. So the variable blah, we run this, we get blah. We can print out that it's blah. If you're not doing IPython, if you just have standard command line, create multiple different objects that are of the same class. Each object contains independent copies. For instance, if we were to define another object with my class and then change the string of the variable above, right? So we've got object X, object Y. We change object Y's variable to yakety instead of blah. We print out both of them. We're going to get blah and then yakety. Cool. We can access object functions. So if this was a function outside of the class, you just do function, right? But because it's in the class, you take your object and then call the function. So the init function is a special function that's called just when the class is being initialized. So you can assign values in a class. Self.number is equal to number. Still setting up that workspace. What this will do is when you make a new object of this class, it'll have this number variable right here, right? Number holder, you pass it in this 7. And it will return 7. Which it's not going to show it, but that's okay. All right, we have a class defined for vehicles. Create two new vehicles called car1 and car2. Set car1 to be a red convertible with $60,000 with the name of Fair, and car2 to be a blue van named Jump worth 10 grand. Okay, kind is car, color value is that, and our code is going to go here. So, car1 equals... Actually, wait, we don't need the new, right? Yeah. Equals vehicle. We don't have an init. So we're going to have to do car1.name to there. car1.color is equal to red. car1.value is equal to, I'm going to copy paste that. Oh, no, don't want that in there. Okay, and then car2 is also a vehicle. car2.name is jump. car2.color is blue. I guess the kind is going to be car1.kind is equal to convertible. car2.kind equals van, and it also needs to be a string. car2.value is equal to 10,000 and 0 cents. Nice. Okay, so that's basics of classes and objects. And now, for the last thing today, modules and packages. Modules and packages basically let you package up usually a set of classes and functions and features so that you can more easily share them. So, for instance, Qiskit and Circ are packages that contain modules. Modules in Python are simply Python files with a .py extension. Name of the module will be the name of the file. So yeah, here we've got a game module and a draw module. Game.py will implement the game. We'll use the function drawGame from the file draw.py, or in other words, the draw module, that implements the logic for drawing the game on the screen. Modules are imported from other modules using the import command right here. We've got import draw. So this is in game.py, so script.py up there, but you know. In this example, the game.py script may look something like this. Play game will have something in there. Actually, I think if we run this, we're gonna get a syntax error. Yeah. An import error for on draw. And then draw.py looks something like that. Let's read through this. So yeah, your main function is what's typically going to run everything else. So PyC is compiled Python, you don't need to worry about that too much. So we also import the function drawGame directly into the main script's namespace by using the from. So what that does is you take this module and you import just specifically one function. Right, so we say from this module, import just this one function. That's all I need, which does make things faster and more efficient. Sometimes it's nicer just to say import star, which imports everything. And then here, instead of saying draw.drawGame, you say draw game because you've done from draw import that, so we know it's coming from there. Same thing with this import star. You just have draw game instead of draw.draw game. You can load modules under any name you want. So you can say import draw as draw. We typically do this with like NumPy. You'll import NumPy as NP. So you don't have to say NumPy every time. The first time a module is loaded into a running Python script, it's initialized by executing the code of the module once. Another module in your code imports the same module again. It will be loaded twice, but not be loaded twice, but once only. So local variables inside the module act as a singleton. They are initialized only once. It's useful to know because this means you can rely on this behavior for initializing objects. For example, we define drawGame. When clearing the screen, we can use the main screen object initializing this module. So we clear the main screen and initialize main screen as a singleton. So main screen will only ever be initialized once. Extending module load path. There are a couple ways we can tell the Python interpreter where to look for modules aside from the default, which is the local directory and the built-in modules. So local directory is just going to be whatever directory you're operating out of, and then the built-in modules are things like math that you can import because they're built into Python. You can either use the environment variable Python path to specify additional directories to look for in modules, in like this. Python path is foo Python game Python and game.py. This will execute game.py and will enable the script to load modules from the foo directory as well as the local directory. Another method is the sys.path.append function. You may execute it before running an import command. So does the same thing as up here. We append foo to our path so that we can look there for modules as well. So if you want to export a built-in module, yeah, you can see the list there. Two very important functions come in handy when exporting modules, the dir directory and help functions. If we want to import the module, urllib, which enables us to create read data from URLs. We simply import the module and we use it. We can look for which functions are implemented in each module by using the directory function. So we import it and we say, give me everything in urlib. There's the list. We find the function in the module we want to use. We can read more about it using the help function inside the Python interpreter. And okay, writing packages. Packages are namespaces which contain multiple packages and modules themselves. They're simply directories, but with a twist. Each package in Python is a directory which must contain a special file called init.py. File can be empty, and it indicates that the directory it contains is a Python package, so it can be imported the same way a module can be imported. If we create a directory called foo, which marks the package name, we can then create a module inside that package called bar. We must not also forget to add the init.py inside the foo directory. And to use the module bar, we import it in two ways, so foo.bar or from foo import bar. The first method, we use the foo prefix Same thing as we had up there. Print an alphabetically sorted list of all functions in the RE module which contain the word find. Oh boy. Okay. So this is a list. So we can do relist is equal to I print this to see if we get what I'm expecting. So it is already so it's already alphabetical. Is it? Yeah. For function in relist, if find in function, print. It says, did you define the variable find members without errors? That's weird. Because, like, I've got here find all, find iter. Yeah, that's all of the ones. Let's look at their solution. They wanted you to put it into find members first. Yeah, that's all right, whatever. That's the same thing I had. Just they put it into a find members. Okay. Well, I'm gonna call that good for today. Go back here and stop sharing. So that's the basics of Python. I really like this Learn Python stuff because they've got exercises down at the bottom so you can actually check to make sure you understand what's going on. If you want to learn more about Python, make sure you check out more of their stuff. That's all I'm going to do, partly because I already know enough Python, and partly because we'll sort of learn Python as we go, getting into the things like Qiskit and Circ and those frameworks. And I guess, yeah, Strawberry Fields, Penny Lane, that's all Python as well. But yeah, thanks for listening, and I will see you back here tomorrow.